This podcast replay is brought to you by EJDConstruction.com. Call Eric at EJD Construction at 305-433-4843. They do it all, residential or commercial. EJDConstruction.com is the custom home builder and general contractor you can trust. 305-433-4843. Hour number two of the program. Appreciate all of you, as always, for keeping it locked here on the show every single day. Don't forget, you can reach out to us on the YouTube chat board. You can also reach out to us on email, Big O Radio Show, Twitter, Big O Show. And of course, you can support us on Cash App and Venmo. All you got to do is search Cash Big O Show. That is Cash Big O Show, and find us there, and appreciate it as always, man. Thank you out there for always supporting our show any way that you can. Carlos says, trade X and a first and extras. If 75 million is enough, then probably 90 million won't be enough in a year's time. He's had one, yes, great year. You're right. He's had only one great year. You're right. That's something that you really cannot argue, you know, but it's a hairy situation, ladies and gentlemen. So all I can tell you, it is an ugly situation right now for the Miami Dolphins. But I think one that they will end up actually benefiting from when it's all said and done. You know, it sucks to lose good players, but you've got to do things that are best for the franchise, not necessarily the player. And if you're able to get compensation, then you can create an even better team, because you're going to get multiple players for one. So if you go out there and you hit on a couple of those players, then all of a sudden you become a much better team. And listen, in the end, if Noah becomes a good corner and Byron Jones does his job, you're going to be fine. And then they can draft another guy. You know, that's the way it is. Let's see. What do we have here? Somebody says, GP Trap, Panther News. Nice move by Zito. Buyout Yandel, protecting Forslund and new contract. Okay. All right. Zito's good, man. Zito actually gets it, you know? So that is... That is news. Let me see. Let me read it for you guys here. George Richards, Florida Hockey Now, says the Florida Panthers will buy out the final 2 years of Keith Yandel's contract on Thursday, officially parting ways with the popular defenseman. Yandel, 34, will become a free agent and sign with any other team when the market opens up in 2 weeks. On Wednesday, came to light that Bill Zito did not ask Yandel to waive his full no movement clause in his contract before the Panthers have to present their protected list for the Seattle expansion draft, which is due Saturday afternoon. Word out of Florida potentially using a buyout on Yandel has been floating around NHL circles for weeks. Thursday morning, Elliot Friedman, NHL insider, says, although Yandel is one of the top point producers among defensemen in the league, his actual defensive play has faltered over the past couple of years. Yeah, he's not really a great defenseman, but he can assist the hell out of the damn puck. I will say that. Florida, despite paying Yandel an average of $6.3 million per season, has been using him as a bottom pair defenseman for much of the season. Since joining the Panthers, Yandel's 30 goals and 231 points ranks him eighth in the NHL among defensemen. His 114 power play points ranks him fourth, while the Panthers kept Yandel in the lineup throughout the season, yada, 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 yada. Okay, so we all know all that. Okay, so good stuff. Again, Zito gets it. Zito has been just a blessing for the Panther organization. I give them credit. I give them a lot of credit for having the balls to get rid of Dale Tallon, because that had to go already. You know, he did a great job over in Chicago, but he had way more than enough time here, and he did absolutely nothing, you know, and because he made a couple picks at the top of the draft, which, come on, dude, if you're half decent at that job, you should be able to figure out who are the best players at the top of the draft. But outside of that, he just didn't do enough for this team. So I love everything about what the Panthers are doing right now. I think finally now they're going to head in the direction of becoming a consistent winner now with those guys. So and remember what we talked about with the Suns earlier in the first hour, that kind of a rite of passage that you've got to go through tough times to get through the better times. Well, the Panthers now got their experience. They got their asses handed to them by Tampa. Now they know what they've got to do to try to get to beating the best team in the league. The one thing that I still say is going to hurt this team for a long time, and I'm not breaking any news here or enlightening anybody out there, but that goalie contract is going to be a cancer. Because if the young kid becomes the guy and you're not using, you know, Bob, and Bob's going to be a $10 million backup, that's $10 million sitting on the bench, which you can go get yourself one amazing player or two very good players for that kind of money. And that part sucks. That part absolutely sucks for the Panthers. Well, then again, you know, Dale Tallon. Way to go, Dale Tallon. Way to go, buddy. It's Dale Tallon, while he might have made a couple picks early in his run, he kind of ended up hurting the team more than helping them. It's the same thing as Inter Miami. They hired a guy that had done a good job in Atlanta, but what he did ends up, you know, setting that team back for a couple years now because of all the mistakes that he made. It's a shame, man. Let's see. Hilbert says, look for the Thrill Williams to do well this season. Okay. Lisa, afternoon, Finns fans. Late start today. Still licking my wounds from last night. LOL. Yeah, your boys are going to get the ultimate test now, Lisa, from here on out. Well, their mental toughness will be tested. We talked a lot about that at the beginning of the show. We addressed a lot of that stuff, too, on the program. Anyway, got a bunch of things to talk about with you here on the show. Richard Sherman, it was breaking yesterday when we were on the show, and I got to tell you, it's sad to see what's going on. Richard, for those of you that don't know, which I doubt, I'm pretty sure most of you know, was arrested resisting arrest, burglary, domestic violence, and malicious mischief for attempting to break into a home where his ex-wife's parents live. Now, the wife came out and said, hey, this is not him. Nobody got hurt, not our children. Nobody got hurt throughout the process. But the 9/11 call is disturbing.
He's being aggressive. He has sent text messages. He's trying to leave now in the house. He's being aggressive. He's wrestling with my uncle. He's threatening to kill himself. He has sent text messages to people saying he's going to hang himself.
What comes to your mind right away? CTE, right? I mean, Richard Sherman's like a really smart dude, bro. Richard Sherman is not your normal football player. Like, you know what? I hate to kind of stereotype it, but, you know, it's kind of like we have that sport labeled like a Neanderthal sport in a way, because it kind of takes a crazy human being to even play that damn sport because your body isn't made for it. But, and we always freak out on the guys that are, you know, really smart. They know how to carry themselves. They're pros, all that. You know, the guys that sound like ogres and sound kind of dumb and they're kind of just brutes and they're just, you know, power players and aggressive nature and violence and all that. Those kind of guys that you see that are just kind of, you know, they're not Lyle Alzados and, you know, guys like that, that you just know they're as close to the animals as human beings. You know what I'm saying? There are just some of those guys that just, you know, they, you know, they're Neanderthals in a way, right? We have fans like that in football, right? We have some fans that are just absolute Neanderthals. They're not thinking about anything. They just, you know, all rip his head off, you know, those kind of people. And so when we run into the guys that are cerebral, when we run into the guys that are intelligent, when we run into the guys that are wait a minute, that guy's studying to be a doctor, a lawyer, that guy's a political science major. This guy, you know, we freak out, right? Because we don't necessarily associate a ton of general intelligence with football, right? It's just, that's the stereotype that comes with it. And this guy is one of those dudes, right? That you look at him and you go, okay, you know, this guy's a normal human being, and Russell Wilson. And, you know, you start looking at some of these guys around the league and, you know, they're not Neanderthals, you know, they're smart people. They're good human beings. And that's always been what you got from Sherman. Sure. He was, he had the bravado on the field and all that, but you know that here he had it put together. Dude went to Stanford and everything, right? So you start seeing this 9/11. You hear this 9/11 call, and I'll play it for you again.
He's being aggressive. He has sent text messages. He's trying to leave now in the house. He's being aggressive. He's wrestling with my uncle. He's threatening to kill himself. He has sent text messages to people saying he's going to hang himself.
So Matt, some of you are putting Matt Roth and Richie Incognito. I mean, you know, you guys nailed it. And that's kind of what it is. You know, Super Boomshack says Richard Sherman is not the intelligent guy that he portrays. Yeah, he is, dude. You don't go to Stanford if you're not intelligent. You negotiate your own contracts. He's a smart dude, bro. He's a really smart dude. But you look now at what's going on, and this spells CTE right there. Right? I mean, that's the part that's disturbing about all of this, is that you see that the act, because he's never acted this way. You've never seen him have the violent issues. Richie Incognito has had violent issues throughout his entire career. So when he goes off, you're kind of used to it, you know? But Richard Sherman, you would figure, would be a guy that would not be caught up in domestic violence issues and things. And listen, we don't really know all of these people, okay? We don't really know entertainers and actors and musicians, and we don't really know them all behind the scenes. But from what we've seen with Richard Sherman, doesn't look like the kind of guy that would act like that. That's why when it came across, remember yesterday, I was kind of floored by it. You know what I mean? It's like, holy crap. And then when you start seeing all this other stuff develop, right away, what comes to mind is obviously CTE. And it's scary to think that, you know, this is a guy that still wants to play, still wants to keep going with his career, which I doubt now that's going to happen, because being Jordan Reed chance after chance, and that guy had like 400 concussions in the league. But I would imagine now that I'm just hoping that Richard Sherman gets some help, because he could have hurt somebody in that incident. Could have hurt the parents, could have hurt the wife, you just never know. So, and you know, you hear this story of the cop trying to subdue him and trying to connect with him by telling him, hey man, you know, I years ago I was a valet guy, and I parked your car. And then, you know, he's trying to reach him. He's trying to socialize with him. He's trying to connect with him in the middle of trying to subdue him. And they had to even release a dog on him and everything. You know, the one of the officers also trying to subdue him got injured. So that's why he's got a resisting arrest charge. It's sad, man. It's sad. It really is, because it just, here's a guy, yeah, Junior Seau, Super Boomshack, right? Junior Seau was like nice, man. Like a really nice dude. Every time you talk to him, super classy, you know, cool. And then you hear about him, you know, and he has the wherewithal of shooting himself in the chest so they can check his brain, which tells you the kind of hell that he must have been going through, that he wanted to kill himself, but yet he still wanted somebody to check his brain because it might help somebody else down the line. But he wasn't willing to live in that hell. And again, I can't relate to this. None of you can relate to this, because we don't suffer from CTE. We don't know what it does to you. It's like, you know, also it's like depression in a way. When somebody tells you I'm suffering from depression and you don't suffer from depression, there is no way you can relate to that person, because all of us, we've been depressed. Everybody's been hell, I was just recently depressed. Okay. from the situation with Onside Radio. But I didn't go into a depression. And I don't know what it's like to be in a depression. I don't know how to relate to that. I can't, when somebody explains it to me or somebody's going through it, I cannot relate with them. I have to feel, you know, bad for them. I want to help them if I can. I can support them, but I can't relate to them because I don't know what that hell is like. I know what it's like to be depressed, but I'm the guy that I can't stay depressed very long. I can't dwell on things. I move on. You know what I mean? And I say, okay, well, how do I overcome this? By trying something else and fixing it and moving on. And obviously this is what I'm doing and I'm fine. I'm happy. I'm ready to go. I do this every day with plenty of energy, more energy than most people. You know what I mean? But I can't relate to it. So I don't know the hell that Richard Sherman might be going through or Junior Seau went through. And none of us do. If we don't suffer from it, we don't know. We don't know what it's like. But I know this, when you're acting like that, just out of the blue, it's not like he's had a violent issue all the time. It's not like he's had several, it's not like he's Pac-Man Jones that's been arrested 10 times. So if Pac-Man is involved in something, some kind of an altercation, are you surprised? No. Of course not. Why? That's his history. He has a violent history. Right? If, what's that scumbag that also plays football? Vontaze Burfict or Burfict or whatever the hell that name is. If that guy gets in trouble, what are you going to say? Oh, no, but that's him. That's who that guy, that's the Neanderthal, by the way, right there. That's the guy that goes with Matt Roth and Richie Incognito. There's your Neanderthal right there, you know, Pac-Man Jones and Vontaze Burfict. They fall into that. That's the image that you get from players sometimes with football. But, you know, I see that situation with Richard Sherman and it just pains me because that's what this game does to some of these human beings. And this is one of the reasons why as parents, you've got to be just absolutely terrified if your son walks up to you and says, I want to play football, because he can suffer those same injuries on a high school field. And I can't imagine what any of you out there, because I'm sure somebody's watching or somebody's going to be downloading, that's a parent that has a child that's playing football and that child suffered a concussion. I can't imagine what would, you know, I love my daughter to death. Okay. And I would do anything for my daughter. So any kind of suffering she goes through would devastate me. So I can't imagine what it would be like. I don't know what it is because I don't have a son that plays high school football. But can you imagine your son playing high school football and he's lying on a field concussed? And then why would you want him playing that sport at this point? As much as I love football, okay, I wouldn't want my son playing football just for that fear. You don't know which hit is going to cause that CTE. You don't know if that hit will cause something, some kind of dementia down the line. Remember, the body's not made for football and your head is not made for collisions. And that dude is a safety. That's a collision position. That's the one thing that overtook me watching that Richard Sherman story is that that poor man could be suffering from CTE now. And what is the rest of his future now at this point? What kind of treatment can he get? Because I haven't seen it where we solve the problem, right? These people that are suffering from CTE, what do we do for them? How do we get them out of that personal hell? So football, as much as I love it, it tears people up and you kind of feel that that's what was going on with Richard Sherman. So my thoughts and prayers go to Sherman and his entire family and his wife, because I just can't imagine what they're going through right now. And you know, she probably still loves him. but it's hard to, when you have to live, you also have to, when you love, you also want to protect. And she's a mother, and nobody protects their children more than mothers. Okay. I mean, naturally is what I'm saying. Okay. I'm not saying every mother out there does what they're supposed to do, but it's a second nature thing. And so she has to, as much as she loves her husband, she has to separate from him in order to protect herself and her kids. You cannot blame her. But again, then look at the personal hell that Sherman could be going through right now, because he is separated from his family, because he's not able to connect with the people that he loves. And that's the foundation that he needs just to survive every day. Because once there's no football, you and I don't give a shit about these people. We don't go searching for any of these players once they retire. We don't care about them. They go to their families and they deal with their knee injuries and their hip injuries and their head injuries and all the surgeries that they need post game and post career and all that stuff. And we don't care, because we treat them like Roman gladiators. Oh, the lion ate him. Drag him out. Bring on the next guy. Let's go. Nothing's changed. These gladiators just die behind the scenes. They don't die on the Coliseum floor anymore. That's the only difference. That's all. Romans at least watch them die right there and then. We don't. They go behind the scenes and they terrorize their families and friends with their issues. And we find out about them when it becomes, you know, a police issue. Outside of that, you know how many families right now are dealing with their loved ones that played in the league and have all kinds of disturbing issues? I mean, that Jim McMahon story, go watch that Jim McMahon story. That dude can't find his way home. He can't find his way home. He can't find his keys. He walks out of the house and he forgot why he was walking out of the house and where to go to. So now he has to be watched constantly. And does anybody give a shit? Does any Bears fan give a shit about Jim McMahon? No, dude, they're worried about Justin Fields. Okay? They can't wait to get rid of Mitch Trubisky. They don't care. That's the world we live in now. Nobody's going to care about Richard Sherman. Not a Niners fan, not a Seahawks fan. Once he's gone, they move on to the next guy. That's what we do. It's the families that have to carry that burden. And that's what I was seeing last night or throughout the day watching that story. And it's just absolutely disturbing, man. How about Ben Utek, former Colts tight end? Dude doesn't even remember his own wedding. Yeah. Mike No Go Zone says, good point. Look at Jim McMahon. Yeah. Big O, very true. My injuries today at 62 have come from high school football. You're lucky. You're lucky, right, GP Trap? That is just injuries, right? That's you're the fortunate one out of it. Because the people that have dementia and all that other stuff, it happens way earlier than you said. You're today at 62. You know, look at Richard Sherman. He's in his 30s. Crazy. If you're just dealing with a knee issue, you're lucky that that's what you ended up dealing with. You had to have your kneecap replaced or something. You're almost fortunate that that's all you suffered in football. That's how crazy it is. Well, I got to replace both my hips. Well, okay, at least it's not your brain. Holy shit, really? Wow. You know, it's nuts, man. It's nuts. So again, I just, prayers to Richard Sherman, because I just thought that story, you know, left me absolutely floored that the poor man, you know, looks like he's going through a personal hell that I don't wish it on anybody. All right, reach out to us on email, by the way, at BigORadioShow@yahoo.com. That's BigORadioShow@yahoo.com. You can also reach out on the YouTube chat board. What else do we have? Oh, yes, of course, super chats we have going on. And you can always support us through Venmo and Cash App. search for Cash Big O Show. That's Cash Big O Show, and send it in. All right. What else do we have going on? Oh, X-Man also put out an IG. I don't know if any of you out there saw it, but X put out an IG, and in the IG, he pretty much put a cryptic message, and this is the message he put. They won't realize how big a part you play until you're not there to play it no more. Now, this only means one thing. This doesn't mean anything else. This is a message to the Dolphins. This is probably him already seeing writing on the wall. He must know, his agent, who's had conversations, I'm sure, with the Dolphins, and his agent has a ton of experience already with the Dolphins and several players with the Dolphins, past and present, all that stuff. So Canner knows exactly what's going on. So David must have already told him in a way, like, you know, I don't think we're going to get that deal done here. And so now you start seeing these cryptic messages. And this is what I'm telling you, that then this becomes the distraction. But you cannot allow a player, any player, to dictate what goes on the team. And you can't allow them to shame you into trying to get a contract, because now X is playing with you. He's playing with your minds now. That's what he's doing. Now he's making you feel like a Dolphin fan because you love the team so much. You want the team to win so badly. So you know you want every player possible on the field so the Dolphins are at their best. But if X is telling you, I'm not going to be here no more, then all of a sudden you get a certain part of Dolphin Nation that loses confidence and says, oh, no, we can't be without X. If we are, our season is over. And that's kind of the drama that kind of fills that void right now that's going on. Because trust me, remember what I just told you about Jim McMahon, Earl Campbell, any of these players of the past that you don't give a shit about? Well, guess what? You didn't give a shit about X 2 years ago in the second half of the season when you knew he was already out and they were playing ball and they were balling and they were winning games with nothing on the field. And if he holds out and you're 5-6 games in, remember one of our listeners said, well, I'm not training him until I find out if Noah can play. Well, if Noah can play 5-6 games in and X is not on the field and you're 4-1, you're like, yeah, trade his ass. Because all of a sudden the desperation is down. It's over. That lack of confidence is gone. Your confidence is now back up again because you're like, hey, no, dude, we got no, he can play. And he wants to be here. That kind of stuff. Minka's gone. Did they not win 10 games last year without Minka? Yeah. So all of a sudden, all that desperation about losing Minka and letting Minka go to the Pittsburgh Steelers and this now, oh, it's the end of the world for us. Oh, how can they allow him to play? How can they allow him to leave? Oh, they let Laremy Tunsil go. Well, they won 10 games without him. If you can coach, if you can draft, if you can develop, you will overcome. I mean, the one position that is going to be hard to overcome, you know what it is. It's quarterback. That one's hard to overcome. But all the other ones, you can find the next left tackle and the next center and the next running back and the next receiver and the next corner and the next defensive end. You can find those guys. Quarterbacks, head coaches, general managers, those are harder to find. So don't allow the drama to kind of fill your head and thinking that this is the only way we can do things. That if we don't have X, it's over. Because that's not true. He's a hell of a player, but he's also replaceable. Because there's another guy ready to go eventually that you'll find that can take over that spot. And that's their job. And if Chris Greer and Flo trade him, well, it's their job to replace him now. They replaced Minka, right? That without Minka, they were fine last year. Bobby McCain did a decent job. They won 10 games. Now they got Javon Holland. They got their Swiss Army knife that they needed back there, and they wanted Minka to be that Swiss Army knife, but the asshole didn't want to be a Swiss Army knife, and his mom also was pain in the ass in the process because she's bitching and complaining. Like I said, issues. Get the hell out. Dolphins are just fine without him, man. If Jackson turns out to be a terrific left tackle overall, who gives a crap about Laremy Tunsil? You maximized it. If Javon Holland is a player, who gives a shit about Minka Fitzpatrick? If Noah can make the transition, then you move on from X, bro. It's just the way it is. But the panic, that's what we're working on now. You got the agent working behind the scenes and working NFL reporters so they can stir up the reports and the talk and all that stuff. Then you got the player sending out the IG messages. And this is all to create desperation. But here's the key, folks. You can be all the desperate you want. You can panic all you want. It's the dudes in Miami Gardens, right? Not Davey anymore, right? It's the dudes in Miami Gardens that cannot panic. And they cannot flinch. And they've got to be showing that, hey, listen, that's fine. I'm sorry we can't accommodate you. We'll move you on. We'll trade you, and we'll continue, and we wish you the best, and we'll go in our direction. Hey, Laremy, we wish you the best. They gave us a deal we couldn't refuse. Hey, Minka, you don't want to be a part of this? There you go. Go to Pittsburgh. Have some fun. We're going to continue doing what we do here. And everything that they've done, none of those people affected anything that they did. X wasn't on the field. They still won games without him. They still got better without him. And they won a massive game at the end of the year. Last year, there was no Minka. There's no Laremy Tunsil. No problem. They won 10 games. So I get that, you know, he's not happy. But these distractions, that's why I'm telling you. That's why I told you earlier, what's next? Now you got your, now he's working social media against you. Now he's sending out these cryptic messages so he can create more doubt and controversy inside the fan base. And that's where Flo and Chris Greer have to kind of stand their ground and say, no, we're not having any of this, dude. We're not going with this. Sorry. It's over. We're not doing it. By the way, a funny story that came out, and it's funny because, again, history makes it all. But Nebraska announced that Trev Alberts will become their AD. And so I laugh at that because the Trev Alberts, for those of us that are a little older, and for those of you that are young, you won't know about this story. But those of you that are older, you're going to remember this story. And so every time I think about Trev Alberts, I think about Mel Kiper. And it comes to, you know, that whole exchange and everything that happened. And I'll explain it in a second. So Nebraska hired Trev Alberts as his new athletic director on Wednesday, hoping a star from the school's glory years can restore what was once the nation's most dominant football program. Alberts, the athletic director at the University of Nebraska Omaha, will fill the job that opened with last month's retirement of Bill Moose. At a news conference at Memorial Stadium, an emotional Alberts alluded to his time in Lincoln and promised to work collaboratively. Other than my faith in my family, everything I have materially and otherwise is a result of an opportunity to be a student at the University of Nebraska, he said. I don't take this responsibility lightly. So for those of you that don't know, Trev Alberts was a draft pick of the Indianapolis Colts years ago. And so the commissioner announces the pick for the Colts, and they went with Trev Alberts. At that time, they needed a quarterback because they had Jim Harbaugh, and Bill Tobin had Harbaugh with him in Chicago. So he brought him over to Indianapolis, and that was his only quarterback on the roster, right? So Kiper, they asked Kiper about the Trev Alberts pick to the Baltimore Colts at that time.
Well, I mean, Albert's a great player. Yeah, there's no question about that, but you got a problem with this move?
I think it's a typical Colt move. I mean, here's a team that needed a franchise quarterback. There were two out there. They have a chance at two. They don't take them. They end up coming back into the picture to get Trent Dilfer. They take an outside linebacker, not even a true outside linebacker. Somebody has to learn coverage in Trev Alberts. They have Coriat. They have Harad. They do have a hole that developed with the release of Dwayne Bickett. But to pass up a Trent Dilfer when all you have is Jim Harbaugh, give me a break. That's why the Colts are picking second every year in the draft, not battling for the Super Bowl like other clubs in the National Football League.
Now, history, the Indianapolis Colts, they had left Baltimore. They're in Indianapolis. They were wrong with Trev Alberts because Trev Alberts was a bust. But Mel Kiper was also wrong because Trent Dilfer was a bust, too. Trent Dilfer never lived up to the hype. He had a big guy, big arm, all that stuff, small school, and he had a lot of the hype, and he sucked. He wasn't anything. I know he won a championship with Tampa Bay. He was a game manager at best. That defense and running game and everything just really, you know, carried them. All he had to do was make a couple of passes. You could have won it with Ryan Tannehill. That Super Bowl, same Super Bowl you would have won with Ryan Tannehill. Any serviceable game manager, okay, could have won that Super Bowl because you had such a monster generational defense that was great. So Bill Tobin, you know, was like, who the hell is Mel Kiper? And so Tobin has his shot at taking at, you know, he takes his shot, I'm sorry, at Kiper.
What do you want to cover first? Our players or that jerk in Baltimore? Well, let me tell you a little bit. I mean, the people in this room, Mel Kiper lives in Baltimore. And I found all this out about the last 3 days. He lives in Baltimore. He tried to hang around the practices up there, I think, when Teddy was a coach earlier. And this didn't come from Teddy. This came from another guy. But he always wanted to work in the NFL. He has no credentials to work in the NFL. He always just hung around. Nobody ever hired him. He's never been hired by anyone. When the Colts moved here, he was very, very upset. So every chance that Mel Kiper gets to shoot at the Colts in Indianapolis, he's going to do it. I happen to have 3 minutes to take a shot back at him. What I said there, probably 300 personnel people in the league would like to have said it. But as I walked down the hallway there, Tom Donahoe called me and said that I won the ringing endorsement of the whole Steeler organization. Thank you for saying it. That was Tom Donahoe. He reaches out to everyone. I got a sister in Burlington Junction, Missouri, that when we took William Perry back in 84 or 85, I talked to her 2 days later, and she said, why'd you take the fat kid? And I said, you just have to believe me. He was the best available, and he was the best available. But, I mean, Mel Kiper gets to your sister. He gets to your mother. He gets to everybody. I just read somebody wrote the article about the receiver down here at Indiana. Came out 3 years ago. Was supposed to be in the third or fourth round by Mel Kiper. He never was drafted. Wasn't even signed as a free agent. He hurt that kid. But there's others he's hurt. Listen to him trash people. This guy can't do this. This guy's dumb. This guy can't do that. And unfortunately, some of the college coaches out there think that Mel Kiper is part of the National Football League inner circle. And he isn't.
So when I saw the Trev Alberts story, that's the first thing that came to my mind. Was that whole exchange between Kiper and Bill Tobin and all of that. And the funny part is both were wrong. Trev Alberts was a bust, and so was Trent Dilfer. He was a bust. I mean, neither one ended up really being a good pick. And for those of you out there that maybe want to enjoy yourselves, here's a Kiper's worst.
One of the two is your number one. Who does Houston take? I'm going to go with Johnny Manziel, and I'm going to say Johnny Manziel for this reason. When you talk to people in the league, I get a consensus on Manziel that I don't get with Bortles or Bridgewater. A consensus that Manziel, at worst, is going five. He's going in the top five somewhere.
Consensus.
Johnny Manziel is a magician on the field. If he eats, sleeps, and drinks football 365 days a year, to me, he can be a very good to great player in the NFL. At today's NFL.
He said sleeps, eats. Did he say drinks? I'm sorry.
NFL kind of suits his skill set very effectively and very well.
All of us, guilty. Amen. Made a lot of fun about the Seattle Seahawks.
Sherman, the former wide receiver turned corner, just an average fifth round pick.
Mel, to the quarterbacks now, Blaine Gabbert, number 8. Cam Newton at number 10.
First of all, Blaine Gabbert did work out in terms of that showing athleticism and that size, which is very imposing, mobility, speed, quickness, and the interview process where you show that football acumen, that character, that face of the organization that you want your quarterback to be moving forward. So Blaine Gabbert, while he didn't throw, moved up, and I think firmly established himself right now as the top quarterback in this draft. Cam Newton needs to make amends during his pro day, but certainly for Blaine Gabbert, I think you could make an argument. He's in the mix for the number one pick overall.
Mel, I'm not sure Mitch Trubisky could throw that game against Alabama. I'm not sure DeShone Kizer could as well. Feels like a tough judgment on DeShone Watson. Why isn't he ahead of those guys?
Well, I think the preciseness and the accuracy throwing the football, and we don't know how tall he is. Is he 6'2" legit? Is he 6'1" and change? We'll see at the combine. You don't have measurables, accurate measurables, until the combine for underclassmen. For right now, I have a second-round grade on DeShone Watson.
There you go. Second-round grade. Blaine Gabbert's the man. So is Trent Dilfer. So is Johnny Manziel sleeps, eats football, right? It's the guy that was drinking, and then maybe he played a little football on the side. Oh, that was so awesome. That was so awesome. So, yeah, that all came to my mind as Trev Alberts, and I read that he got hired as the AD of Nebraska. And it is amazing. I mean, listen, it's not just Nebraska, right? Tennessee used to be a power. They can't find their way back. University of Miami can't find their way back. Florida State has lost its way. We have several powers in football. Texas has been gone for a long time. You know, it's interesting. USC, I mean, they're irrelevant. They've been irrelevant forever now. There's a lot of these big-time programs, man, and Nebraska is one of them. They were prominent. They were one of the top teams every single year. And they lost their way, and they haven't been able to get back on track. And again, like I just mentioned, it's not just Nebraska. There are several schools, including the one in our backyard, that can't seem to find a way to, you know, recapture that past magic. And it's not easy. I mean, the day Tennessee fired Philip Fulmer, they never recovered again. They brought him back as an AD and all that stuff, but it was already done then. I would have never imagined in 2020, 2021 now, that FSU would be irrelevant, that the University of Miami would be irrelevant, that Tennessee would be irrelevant, that USC would be irrelevant, that Texas would be irrelevant. Seriously, I would have never imagined that in 2020. If you tell me in 2000 or in 1995, hey, these five teams are going to be irrelevant in 2021, I would have laughed you out of everywhere. I would say, get the hell out of here, dude. Those are all national powers. They're all going to always be. They're always going to be great. And they're not. It's crazy. So we'll see if Trev Alberts can turn Nebraska around. It will not be easy because no one else has been able to do it. They've got to change their ways, and they've got to go more modern. And they kind of were stuck in that old style football for a long, long time, but they have just not made the switch. But then again, there's lots of other reasons why others have not been able to make it back. Saquon Barkley. I got to give Saquon Barkley a little love, man. Yeah. Because Barkley, you know, listen, we are big fans of crypto in this show, right? We talk about crypto all the time. So Barkley now, he is going to take all of his earnings off the field, okay? This is how the article goes. He knows the value of cryptocurrency moving forward, so he's all about Bitcoin. Barkley said on Wednesday that he'll be taking all of his future endorsement money in Bitcoin. Barkley made his announcement on an episode of Joe Pompliano's new show on YouTube, The Best Business Show. He says, "You see how high inflation is, and you learn you can't save yourself through wealth," Barkley said on the show. "That's why I'm going to be taking my marketing money in Bitcoin." Smart kid, dude. Smart kid. He signed deals in the past with Nike, Pepsi, Visa, and Dunkin' Donuts. He goes, "I think it's just a smart thing to do and the right thing to do to start taking my investment money in Bitcoin and through Strike," Barkley added. He's currently playing on a four-year, $31 million contract with the Giants that included a $20 million signing bonus. And obviously, he's got a lot of endorsement deals. Smart kid, bro. Smart kid. Because, again, don't worry about the dip. Buy the dip is what you do here. You got to hang in there. Because crypto is one of those things that's kind of odd. You will have your valleys. And when you have your valleys, the valleys sometimes will last a couple weeks, sometimes a month. Sometimes it'll last several months. It's lasted even a year at times. And that's just the way it is with Bitcoin. And then when it bounces back, it just explodes. And then that's when you ride the wave. And when you get to a point where you're profiting, you start to take some of your profits out, your initial investment. Okay. And suggestion to all of you out there. If you're playing crypto, I'm not a financial advisor, but go to crypto.com. Okay. Get an account there, buy your currency there. And when you do have your profit or your savings money, you can move some of your savings money over to crypto and buy USDC coin, which is a stable coin. And you stake that and you get 10%. So if you're sitting there and you got $1,000 sitting in your savings account, it's not doing shit for you, dude. It's not making any money for you in their savings. Okay, so if you got $500, $1,000, $10,000, whatever, man, go to crypto.com, move your money over, purchase USDC coin, and then stake it for 3 months. You can stake it for 3 months at a time and get 10%. That's your money working for you, man. I mean, if it's sitting there in your savings account, do that. Because that's what you should do. I mean, but people have to really understand what's going on with crypto, man. You know, and if you own Matic, which, by the way, it went down to the low 90s, take advantage, buy a little Matic. Anyway, you can stake that and you can get 10% also on crypto. I think Ethereum, I think it's 4.5% or 5%. So if you own a lot of it, like John Rouse, I know he got a bunch of Ethereum. If you got it on crypto, on crypto.com, then stake all that Ethereum, man. Stake it and get 4.5%, 5% on it. You know, you could do the same thing with Bitcoin. I think it's 4.5%. Most of them are 2%. Most of the coins are around 2% that you're going to get, but still 2% is better than nothing. But there are some coins that are a little higher, like I said, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Matic. Matic, they're giving you 10%, man. I staked all my Matic there. Hells to the yeah. And they give you more Matic, okay? At the end of your run, they pay you in Bitcoin. They pay you in Ethereum. They pay you in Matic. They pay you in whatever you're staking. They don't give you USDC coin. They don't give you Crow. They give you whatever coin you're staking. Now, if you stake USDC, that's what you're earning, USDC. So you're earning money back the same way. But the cool part is if you stake Bitcoin, they're giving you back Bitcoin. So you're getting, I think it's 4.5% or 5.5% of Bitcoin back. So you're gaining even more in the process. Like I stake my Crow and I'm glad that there's been a dip because the Crow I'm getting at a lower price. And then when it goes up, it's going to soar. The Ethereum that I'm getting at a lower price. So when it goes up, it's going to soar and I'm going to have even more. You know what I mean? So take advantage, folks. Big O, get your fix and English Beat tickets tomorrow. You damn right. I'll be at the Culture Room, bro. I'll be there to see Cy Kernan jamming with the boys. Damn straight. Can't wait to go to that. Get a little Rick Wakeling and Cy Kernan. Two exceptional talents. I can't wait. Big O, are you getting the BlockFi Bitcoin credit card? No, sir. No, sir. I have crypto.com. They have the best Visa card out there, bro. Okay? The best. Go to crypto.com, sign up for the Visa card. I'm telling you, okay? You know, I should put the link on my Twitter account. That way you guys can get 25 and I can get 25 in the process. So we both can make a little extra money. How about that? All right, let's see. What else do we have? Mel Kiper is a Count Chocula cousin, White Chocula. He is wrong in majority of the time, yet still is notorious. Maybe it's because he stole Roy Orbison's glasses. And you know, he's also a great soundbite. Like, he knows all the players. And he can tell you something about all the players, whether he's right or wrong or whatever. But he does a great job of memorizing all those players and every single one and give you some kind of, might be a nugget, may not be, you know what I mean? But I will tell you this, when it comes to insight in the NFL, I don't think people in the NFL are talking to him. I don't believe that. I've been to over 20 Senior Bowls. I've seen him there one time. I've never seen him at the East-West Shrine. I went to the Orlando Football Classic. What was it called? The Gridiron Classic. A couple of years, never saw him there. Went to the Las Vegas Football Classic once, never saw him there. I've never seen him in any of those bowl games. Never. And that's where you want to go. Not just to see the talent yourself, but all the NFL people are there. That's how I've met a ton of NFL people and gotten to know them. And I can call them, you know, anytime. That's always been the way that you do business. So it's just weird to me, but he's made a great living, man. God bless him. He's been a rock star for the draft. But you know, there's plenty of those kind of moments in his history. All right, let me take a quick break here. Give me 1 minute and we will start hour number 3.